This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Are you nuns? And I'm not talking about religious women with bad habits. I'm talking about those of us who choose none of the above when it comes to religion. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I suppose I'm a nun too, right? N-O-N-E spelled nun. I'm Dan Barker. I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're based in Madison, Wisconsin. We're a national group founded in 1978, a state church watchdog, and the largest association of freethinkers, which means atheists, agnostics, none of the above, the non-religious.
And the nuns now, we can call ourselves.
And you can ask for more information, a complimentary copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, or just join us at ffrf.org.
We've got a lively show today. In a minute, we'll be talking about the exciting results of the new American Religious Identification Survey, which was released this week, and we'll be talking with its principal author and investigator, Barry Cosman. The American Religious Identification Survey, ARIS, ARIS, shows that the non-religious, referred to in the survey as the nuns, are now the third largest segment of the United States by religious or non-religious breakdown, which is great news this week. So we guess it's downward Christian soldiers, because Christianity has actually gone down in numbers as godless Americans are becoming a force in this country.
And on the second half of Free Thought Radio, we'll talk with a returning guest, journalist and author Susan Jacoby. You may know her as author of Free Thinkers, A Secular History, and The Age of American Unreason. She's going to talk with us about what's wrong with President Barack Obama keeping a faith-based initiative going. Susan Jacoby had an op-ed a few weeks ago in the New York Times about that very question.
Speaking of Barack Obama, the week started with the president's very welcome announcement.
Hallelujah.
That he has lifted the embargo on embryonic stem cell research lines, a ban imposed by his predecessor. And here's what the president said, in part, on Monday, to a room full of appreciative, applauding scientists.
It is about ensuring that scientific data is never distorted or concealed to serve a political agenda, and that we make scientific decisions based on facts, not ideology.
And that's a lot of applause. There was perhaps just a bit of a euphemism being employed here, as science was not really being held hostage to ideology for 8 years, it was being held hostage to religious ideologues, primarily the Roman Catholic Conference of Bishops and a few ultra-religious right Protestant lobbies. But it's wonderful that scientists in this country will no longer be handicapped.
And what he was really saying was that it's a separation of church and state.
That's right.
And now on to the other exciting news of this week. Listen to this recap by the NBC Nightly News.
Tonight we have the results of a major new survey on religion in America. NBC's Ann Thompson has our report.
Freedom of religion, a bedrock principle of the American way of life. But today a shrinking percentage of Americans identify themselves as members of organized religions. According to the new American Religious Identification Survey, Catholics are the largest group, followed by Baptists. But the fastest growing group are Americans who claim no religion at all, up from 8% in 1990 to 15% today.
And we have on the phone with us from Connecticut, Dr. Barry A. Cosman, who was interviewed on that NBC segment, who is a principal author. He's a sociologist and principal investigator of the American Religious Identification Survey released this week, making headlines across the nation. He was also a principal investigator of the previous ARIS surveys in 1990 and in 2001. Professor Cosman is a founding director of the Institute for the Study of Secularism in Society and Culture, a research professor of Public Policy and Law Program at Trinity College, and the author of some books. One is called One Nation Under God, and a more recent book called Religion in a Free Market. Thanks so much for joining us today, Professor Cosman. We know you're in big demand this week.
Well, yeah, it's nice to be in demand, but I've always got time for friends.
We've been following your career for many years. The first survey in 1990, which was not as exciting as the 2001 that showed this huge growth among seculars. And we were wondering, you were suggesting that some people were thinking that it was a fluke. Is the growth of secularism a fluke in the United States?
No, I don't think so. I think there's some very clear indicators socially of why that has occurred. I mean, you've only got to think about, if you think about structurally, a better educated population, many changes in the social climate, growing diversity, a nation which seems to be more tolerant of difference, and people feel freer to, tell you what they think and what they are. So I don't think that's surprising. And also we saw sort of in the 1990s sort of changes in, for instance, repeal of blue laws, states changing their constitutions to allow gambling and sale of alcohol on Sundays. So there were some indicators out there that society was changing, and that has ramifications and eventually into the populace as a whole and feeling that maybe they can kind of reject their religious origins, as it were. So, there's a bit of freeing up of thought, if you want to call it that. And so I wasn't particularly surprised. As a sociologist, there's been a great debate about the secularization thesis, and everybody says, well, actually, the modern world, the modern technology doesn't, surprisingly, the population of the world is becoming more religious. Now, I'm one of the people who doesn't believe that, because even the religious people I see have changed. And certainly they haven't got their grandparents' religion. Even the religious in America today, the conservative Christians, are, different to the past. There's fewer bells and whistles, fewer vestments, less formal religion, less, hymn singing and traditional texts.
And getting married in church and buried in church.
Yeah, I mean, even those things have changed a great deal. So that, the so-called conservative churches everybody talks about that are growing are they have some kind of, what can we call it? Coming back to our book, The Free Market, they seem to be much more consumer-friendly.
Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the ARIS results, Professor Cosman, I'm intrigued by your position as founder and director of the Institute for the Study of Secularism in Society and Culture, and wonder if you can tell us about that.
Well, this is supported by foundations that are interested in this. It came out of the 2001 study, and then I used to be at the PhD program in sociology at the City University Graduate School then, and people were very intrigued by what appeared to be this change of, growing secularization in society. And they wanted to know something about it, and people want to know about it for two reasons, those people who think it's a good idea and those people who think it's a bad idea. I like to think we're not an advocacy organization, it's not... We study, whatever my personal opinions, which, I'm not going to reveal my kind of spiritual concerns, but I will say that, on one level, why am I interested in secularism? Part of the thing I teach about is, political secularism, constitutional secularism. Yeah, I believe that, and that to me is First Amendment and, separation of church and state. And so we're interested in that whole area of legal and political pieces, but we're also interested in secularity and the change in, which is the opposite of religiosity, which hundreds of departments in the country are interested in, religion departments. And so what we do research and we're looking at curriculum in those areas. It's coming back to the main point. It's not advocacy, but we certainly release information and organize conferences and talk about teaching of, the Enlightenment and things like that, which, may have been forgotten by other people.
Yeah.
We noticed that in 1990 there was about 8% seculars, and in 2001 it was more than 14%. that are seculars. And now this survey from 2008 shows 15% of Americans are what you would call the nuns. Yeah. But you also throw in the don't knows and the refuse to answer to round it up to about 20%, or one in five Americans.
Yeah, well, you know, the don't knows and the refusals seem to be, you know, have some social, educational, and other characteristics that make them look like a bit like that. But, you know, often, you know, in the past, we know that people who refuse to take part in surveys, I mean, I'll give you an example, although we're not biased, but the key question here is, what is your religion, if any? If you're really turned off and antagonistic to that question, you may refuse rather than turn around and say, atheist, no religion. So I think, you know, the nature of you know, kind of social psychology is that a lot of the refusers won't be people who say, yeah, I'm born again, you know? You know, they're going to be people on the other polarity.
So roughly one in five Americans are none of the above then.
Yeah, well, I mean, but we have, you know, the key question is a belonging question. What is your religious, if any? It's religious identification. But we have belief questions. And, you know, we asked about, what is your, as you see in the report, if anybody wants to look at it, there's a question there about the existence of God. Do you think God is, you know, do you believe in a personal God? Do you believe in a higher power? You know, don't know, and definitely there isn't one, sort of. So we offer kind of, you know, a kind of traditional Judeo-Christian approach of a personal God, a deist, or even maybe some people may even suggest a kind of pagan theology of a higher power.
I think that music is our sign that we need to take a break here.
Okay.
Our engineer is telling us. I'm Dan Barker. We're talking with Professor Barry Cosman, and I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor on Free Thought Radio. We're talking about the recent ARIS, American Religious Identification Survey, and we'll be right back after this.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021.
If you don't believe in God, or if you have a problem with organized religion, there is a new radio show just for you. The Liberal Radio Network, Air America, has a new program called Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're talking on the phone with Professor Barry A. Cosman, the principal investigator in the ARIS, American Religious Identification Survey, that came out showing that if the none of the aboves, the non-believers, if we were an organized denomination, we would be number three in the country. Isn't that right, Professor Cosman?
That's correct. 15% or 20% of the population don't have a religious preference when asked, what is your religion, if any? In terms of belief, there are some interesting differences between the belonging. About 1 or 2% of people say they're atheists or agnostic. But when you ask an actual theological question about the existence of God, 10% of the population say that they fall into, you know, denial of the divinity, or, you know, you got to prove it to me kind of stuff, and I haven't seen it yet, which is agnostic, I guess. And about 12% believe in a higher power. So that means it's about 30% of the population that don't believe in the traditional Judeo-Christian concept of a personal God. Now, we have a behavior question, which is even more interesting. We asked people in this survey for the first time if they would seek a religious burial. Now, you know, anthropologically and historically, you know, the termination of your life has often been seen as the greatest strength of religion, because people are theoretically supposed to be very concerned about salvation, their immortal soul, and going to heaven. Now, 27% of Americans said they didn't expect to have a religious funeral. So, I mean, that
tells you a lot, doesn't it?
That's a great number. So you've got, you know, sort of 70% of the population that are kind of religious and, you know, pretty confirmed in it. About half of those are very confirmed, very pious, and, you know, sort of religious right, if you want to call it, supporters. And then you've got another, you know, 20 to 15 to, you know, around 30% of people who are skeptical in terms of belief, or anti-religious, or just, you know, indifferent and, you know, religiously unmusical. So you've got this constituency of nuns that we're talking about is made up of the irreligious, the non-religious, the anti-religious, and a new group of people who are worried about, at least up here in New England, about the Catholic Church, who kind of old-style anti-clericalist in the French, Jacobin, or Mexican tradition.
Now, you did. There was a change from the 2001 era survey you did and the 2008, which showed that the most non-religious state in the country is what?
Vermont now.
Vermont.
And that was 34%, and you pointed out in your survey that's the least religious state by a full 9 points. And what was the region that used to have that?
Well, historically, it went with the frontier. Historically, as we all know from those cowboy movies, it's young, single, you know, gambling, drinking males who didn't go to church.
Seattle and Portland.
Or the pastors. It was Oregon and Washington State, which always led in the past, historically, you know, for the last 100 years. And we confirmed that in 1990, 2001. And then you had this quite remarkable change. And it is as a result of a lot of disaffection and disillusion amongst former Catholics. In other words, there's a real reciprocal. As the percentage of Catholics in New England went down, the percentage of no religion moved up.
Well, that's the largest segment in the Freedom From Religion Foundation membership, former Catholics.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, Catholics are 25% of the population, 1 in 4. But, you know, we actually ask people their point of origin. And we know that 43% of the new nuns, right?
Yeah.
Are former Catholics.
Well, there's that music playing again.
And just quickly, how big is the non-religious segment compared to respected minority religions? 30 seconds left here.
Well, it depends how you count traditions, but if you go with a straight oval, you know, the usual way of counting them is Catholics first, Baptists second, and now the nuns are third, which is quite a big change.
And then we have, like, Jews at 1.2%, Mormons 1.4%, Buddhists 0.5%.
Yeah,
so we're really a big minority now.
Yeah, a very big fraction
and we
of
have
the population.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you,
Barry. This was really informative. And look for the ARIS survey online. This is Dan Bark with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back.
To talk with Susan Jacoby.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Beware of dogma.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
Did you hear me barking on that music?
Yes, that's you.
That was Dan Barker barking on the show. And we're pleased to have back on Free Thought Radio journalist and author Susan Jacoby. Susan Jacoby has written 9 books, including Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism, and last year the book came out, The American Age of Unreason. She's got a new book coming out in April, Alger Hiss and the Battle for History. Susan Jacoby is program director of the Center for Inquiry, New York City, and she writes for a variety of newspapers and is a panelist for the Washington Post and Newsweek's blog on faith. Of particular interest to us on this show is Susan Jacoby's op-ed piece that appeared on March the 1st in the New York Times. It's called Keeping the Faith, Ignoring the History.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Susan Jacoby.
I'm glad to be back.
Now, it's been a good week for science with President Obama's lifting of the embryonic stem cell line embargo. It's been a good week for Free Thought with the release of the American Religious Identification Survey.
Right.
But we just can't seem to get government out of the faith-based funding business, can we?
No. That's not surprising. President Obama campaigned that he was going to expand the faith-based programs, and he is.
Yep, he's keeping his word.
It's not that this is anything that ought to surprise anyone. He did, however, what I was writing about, and what really bothers me is that he also pledged during the campaign that he would see to it that there would be no proselytizing and no discrimination in hiring in his faith-based programs.
In hiring and firing
staff. And he has backed off from that a bit in that when he announced his faith-based office and his new director, he said that these are going to be submitted to the Justice Department case by case to make sure that there's no discrimination in hiring and so on.
And which is a mess.
But what he could have done is he could have just, you know, decreed it by executive order right there, and he didn't. And
he
and
should
that's
have
not
done
good.
That. He pledged to do that, and he didn't do
and
it.
And he didn't do it.
Now, we were very, excuse me, we're pleased and grateful that you wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times earlier this month. But and as I was saying to you on the phone before the show started, I can't remember any other op-ed piece, you know, against the expansion of the faith-based initiative by the Obama administration.
Well, you know why I think that is. I think that the thing, the reason for that is just very simple. Everyone is so fixated on the economy.
Right.
And so much of the news is about the economy that a lot of other things are just sliding by that wouldn't in more ordinary times.
But I still feel that there's a sense of, you know, when there's a violation of the separation of church and state and it continues unchallenged, it creates a precedent, but it also, people get used to it and they get unconcerned.
Well, because 8 years ago, there was a lot
was
more
a huge
of an
outcry.
Well, I think that is the point, is that people have gotten used to it because it's now, it started with in 1996 with the charitable choice language in Bill Clinton's welfare reform bill.
Which was written by Ashcroft.
Which was really the bad opening wedge of the whole thing.
And I do have to blame John Ashcroft for that.
Yeah,
he wrote that.
Well, I blame Bill Clinton for it.
As well, yes.
The fact is he didn't have to leave it in.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Bush came into office, the real implications of this became apparent because Bush actually established a White House faith-based office. Clinton didn't.
And as you know, Dan and I were plaintiffs, among the plaintiffs with Ann Gaylor, who tried to sue, and we're told no taxpayer has the standing to challenge this.
Yeah, well, that's the Supreme Court. I mean, I think that was a ridiculous decision against you, and that was a terrible. Why should no taxpayer have the standing to challenge this?
So right. Clinton started this slippery slope, and look where we are today.
Clinton started this slippery slope. His idea was just to so that religious organizations could compete for certain grants under that welfare reform plan with secular organizations. But what I think we're at a bad turning point here with Obama for this reason, that this has been institutionalized under a right-wing Republican administration. If it becomes even more entrenched under a Democratic administration, which may very well, apart from my general objection to any money for faith-based programs, I'm sure the Obama administration is likely to authorize programs much more in line with my thinking than Bush. But that isn't really the point.
Right.
Point is, we have another administration. They can do this immense amount of proselytizing. And I think, really, I have to say that the sort of the Democratic left in the Democratic Party, the religious left in the Democratic Party, of which Obama is a part and had many advisors from the religious left, their only objection to faith-based funding is that under Bush, nearly all of it was going to right-wing Christian organizations. What they envision is faith-based funding going to left-wing religious organizations.
Expanding it. Yeah.
And I object to those things equally. And I think if this continues, then nobody's ever going to question this program. It's just going to be there under whatever administration there is.
Well, this is what it's looking like. I don't know if you caught that President Obama said that he was going to also give this advisory panel that he's created global powers. He's going to try to expand the faith-based council globally, that they're going to have some say in his global positions. And that
was
disturbing.
Well, I think there is something else that's already happened, though. Obama has already reversed the gag rule, which basically forbade any U.S.
Yes.
foreign aid to family planning programs where they even mentioned the possibility of abortion. Also, you're not going to see under Obama what was under Bush, which was a huge, basically all foreign aid programs for humanitarian aid when it went to groups that promoted abstinence only. So you had the ridiculous thing of all of our AIDS prevention money in Africa going to groups that didn't distribute condoms. That you're not going to see under Obama.
We hope not, but he hasn't actually undone that, but it looks like that's going to happen next, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's really pretty much their administration is not going to be giving money to right-wing Christian proselytizing groups that don't give out condoms under the guise of family planning. But the problem with all of this, of course, And the more it's done by executive orders in a way, the worse it is that who it goes to can be reversed by any president at all. There's a conservative Republican president the next time. You're going to have money going to conservative programs. But that isn't my or your basic objection to it. I just object to it. First of all, I think that the right-wing Christians are a lot more honest in saying that they are going to use these programs to proselytize than the religious left in the Democratic Party. I think the idea that you can separate the religious and the secular part of these missions is utterly ridiculous. And I think it is ridiculous from a religious point of view, too. You know, how are people who believe in proselytizing and conversion somehow going to zip their lips while they're dispensing the secular food?
and of course, money is fungible.
People don't operate that way.
And some of the religious right then are upset with Obama.
The religious right is upset because Obama hasn't said that they can continue to proselytize and discriminate in hiring. But I understand their position. If you are from a right-wing Christian organization, all of your mission of charity is mixed up intrinsically with your desire to make converts.
Exactly.
But a lot of the religious left won't admit that. They act as though you can give money for one thing and it'll be used for secular purposes. And of course, the other thing as far as these community-based programs addressing poverty is they're all dealing with very vulnerable, captive groups of people. You know, if I'm a prisoner and I think accepting Jesus as my savior is going to get me early parole, I'm going to accept Jesus as my savior.
These groups have all this all-powerful God. Why don't they ask him for the money instead of the taxpayers? Why don't they do it with their own money?
That's the belief, not in the Bible. Most Americans believe that these words are in the Bible. The Lord helps those who help themselves. They're not. Clearly, those words are not in the Bible. But there's another thing too, which is also equally disturbing. All of this got started based on the premise. And here is where Obama ought to be taking a look at things. He's promised to restore science to its proper role in policymaking. All of this is based on the assumption that religious groups can do these things better than secular groups. There has been absolutely no objective research done on this at all as to whether these programs work at all or whether they work better than secular programs do. As I mentioned in my op-ed piece, one piece of research that was done and heavily promoted by the Bush administration on Charles Colson's prison fellowship ministries, it seemed to indicate at first glance that people who'd been through this program were much less likely to be rearrested after they left prison. But the problem is they didn't include any dropouts. It's as though you were to evaluate schools on the basis just of who finishes, so that if you have a 50% dropout rate, that's not counted in the analysis of the results.
And if only 5% make it through.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you have to take it on faith.
What this so-called research was based on was on those who completed the program, not on those who dropped out of it.
It's like everything else in religion. They expect you to take the success on faith. I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. We'll be right back to have some more conversation with a very refreshing voice in journalism and the secular movement, and that is author Susan Jacoby.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters."
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Geller. And we're back with our guest, Susan Jacoby. She's the author of Freethinkers, A History of American Secularism, a steady bestseller at FFRF.org, and last year's book, The American Age of Unreason. And she has a forthcoming book, Alger Hiss and the Battle for History. We're talking with Susan Jacoby about her op-ed piece on March the 1st in the New York Times criticizing President Obama's faith-based council.
When we were talking during the break with you, Susan, you wanted to point out that this is inherently a discriminatory idea.
Right. It's inherently discriminatory, these faith-based programs. If only because by default, the people who get them are the religions that believe in government aid. There are many religions and strong religious traditions in this country who are opposed on religious grounds to taking any money from the government. Most liberal and mainstream Protestant organizations are opposed to these programs. Most non-Orthodox Jews are opposed to these programs. And so, therefore, you are inherently violating the First Amendment because a lot of this money is going to people who believe in this kind of thing. And there's a practical thing. I won't tell you that if I were religious and taking this money, I'd be concerned. There's been very strong support for this in the African American community because those churches serve very poor communities, and their congregants don't have the kind of money to support them that say the Mormon Church does, which by the way also doesn't believe in taking government money, but it doesn't need it. But these poor churches, think about it, if they become dependent on a government dole, so to speak, for part of their operations, what happens to them when another administration that doesn't like their programs comes in? I mean, there is a real danger to religion in this, too, which a lot of religious people see.
Or if we could win a lawsuit declaring it unconstitutional in some dream of the future.
Not with this Supreme Court, for sure.
No, but and also, of course, under former President Bush, he was using this for votes.
There were
some key black communities in Milwaukee, in Philadelphia.
What he would do is he would give faith-based money to churches in swing districts. Obviously, it wasn't going to change the African-American vote dramatically.
But it did help.
But it helped in certain communities in certain racially mixed congressional districts, absolutely.
It seems to me that it's very corrupting to both the state and the churches to have
no,
this
no
kind
question
of funding.
About it. It's corrupting to both the state and the church, absolutely.
Is there something in the fact that Obama picked a Pentecostal to be the head of the White House Office of Faith-Based Initiative? And what do you know about this guy, if you know anything?
Well, this guy was Obama's director of religious outreach during the campaign, and he is typical of the religious left. He is a political liberal who is also deeply Christian and doesn't believe, really, in separation of church and state. Not in the way that we believe in it, and so that you know what I know about him is that he believes you can have faith-based aid without violating the Constitution, and that's why he was picked for this job.
And Susan, did you read the story? It was in USA Today about how the White House is now commissioning and vetting prayers for presidential rallies, and this is distressing. I mean,
I didn't vote for Obama because I thought he supported my ideas about church and state. I know why they're vetting them. They're vetting them so that somebody won't come up there and say something
really terrible,
really awful.
Right. But still, it's so inappropriate.
What they're doing is they're vetting them so that nobody's going to stand up and say, you got to believe in Jesus
or you go
Christ
to hell.
To be a real American.
Right.
Or you're going to hell.
But still,
so
this is the problem.
They're vetting them to make these kind of ecumenical, sort of meaningless blah blah prayers, thanking God and nothing more.
To me, that is an establishment of religion. That's the government telling religious people what to say and do.
That's why we shouldn't be having invocations,
right,
and all of that stuff on public occasions.
So,
of course, it's the government saying, we need a religious invocation, but it can't offend anybody. Here's news. This is why the secular constitution was written. A lot of people's religious beliefs are offensive to a lot of other religious people. That is one of the good reasons for keeping it all out of government.
And also, prayer is offensive to me if it's government, and to you and anybody.
Yeah, but
who's
we
secular.
Don't count. We non-believers.
Even though we're now about 15%,
right?
Of people,
why don't they want to boo
we
us?
We don't really count. All they really want, to be sure, is that some particular form of Christian isn't offending Jews, and some Jews aren't offending Christians, and some Muslims aren't offending everybody else. They don't want any extremist religious rhetoric. I frankly preferred the era when people actually fought about religion, you know, like basically Cardinal Spellman and Eleanor Roosevelt went at each other, and they really, Eleanor Roosevelt didn't like the Catholic Church one bit, and Cardinal Spellman didn't like Eleanor Roosevelt one bit, and it was more honest. Now we have this myth, this sort of deadening tolerance that, oh, well, we all believe in God in our own way.
Right.
And religion is always a force for good and unity when we know that's not so. And the reason they want to vet prayers is that so nobody, you know, so that the teeth and claws of religion won't rear themselves in public.
Well, we have run out of time. We've been talking with author Susan Jacoby and journalist, and you can Google her excellent op-ed piece in the New York Times, Keeping the Faith, Ignoring the History. Thank you so much, Susan, for joining us today and for speaking out.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, as always.
Susan's new book will be out in April, Alger Hiss and the Battle for History. You can listen to all of our shows. Go to our webpage, ffrf.org/radio, and you can either listen to each one as an archive, or you can subscribe to the podcast.
Or it's in iTunes, right?
On iTunes.
And we urge you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, join the growing population of nuns, ask for more information at ffrf.org, call 1-800-335-4021. I want to thank our guests, Barry Cosman and Susan Jacoby, and thank you for listening. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting. And signing off, Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.